Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
So ever since this power outage happened last week, you've been hearing over and over Paul Pacelli just rave about the fact that he's from Wallingford and that he has publicly owned power. So to give us some perspective on the pros and cons of this, we have the mayor of Wallingford, Mr. Bill Dickinson. First of all, let's start with what is publicly owned power? What does that mean?
Well, basically, it means that the distribution system in the community, all the wires, the poles, substations are owned by the Wallingford Electric Division, which is a division of the local government. Back in 1899, the town leaders believed that not natural gas, but electricity would become the preferred power, and they began putting in a distribution system for electricity, and it's grown since then. That's now known as Wallingford Electric Division. It's a choice a community can make. I'm sure it was expensive back in those days. However, today, for a community to want to take over the distribution system within its boundaries would be an expensive proposition. Most probably, it would have to be purchased from the owner of those substations, the cables, poles, etc., which would typically in Connecticut be either Eversource or Avangrid along the coast. Avangrid was once called United Illuminating. And they are investor-owned utilities. They're private companies, but owned by shareholders, private corporations. In Wallingford, it's owned by the government or the people. The people own it, and the government administers public power.
What would you say are the pros to having publicly owned power?
Well, let's start with in an emergency.
Sure.
In an emergency, we basically control within our distribution area, our jurisdiction, and we can coordinate with the other safety emergency response efforts of the community. So whether it's Public Works or the fire department, or the police department, any of those departments may be needed at various times during a storm. Certainly, the electric division cannot be clearing a road, or they're not in a position to be able to clear a road to be able to reach a place if there's a tree across a road. So they coordinate with our public works department. The police are there to make sure that things are safe as far as other traffic trying to use the same highway. The fire department is responding to medical emergencies. So there's that ability to coordinate all of that within the area, the 40 square miles of Wallingford, whereas with the investor-owned utilities, there is much more of a challenge to get the support, the presence of various other first responder agencies to a given location over all of the many miles. The size of Connecticut is a considerable area, and given that each town has its own public works department, first responders and police fire, it can be more of a challenge to coordinate all of that on a minute-by-minute basis. We have that advantage. It's centralized. It's all within Wallingford, and all of it is under control of local government.
Okay. Talking to Wallingford Mayor Bill Dickinson. But, Mayor, what would you say is the con to this? I've got to imagine that, you know, more than 100 of our towns and cities went more of the UI or Eversource route because that made sense for them, or it was less expensive, or it was more reliable. You know, why is it that there's only a few towns and cities in Connecticut that have gone the same route as Wallingford?
Well, that's... I don't really have a good answer. I can guess at that. I think certainly it was people back in 1899. I mean, it's quite a few years, over 100 years
just
ago.
Just a couple, sure.
And even though the outlay of money then was considerable, they felt that was something that was in the best interest of the community. So in other communities, private companies undoubtedly were there, especially larger communities, were there to say, hey, we can do this, and the community turned over the reins, the control of the delivery of the service to a private corporation that said, we have the expertise, we can do this for you. In Wallingford, we benefited from some far-thinking people who maybe had some practical skills and knowledge about the delivery of electricity themselves. I'm not sure, but at the kickoff of anything, it can be easier to get into it than later on. Today, to be trying to set up changing the ownership of the distribution system within a given large geographic area would be a major amount of money to purchase what is existing in the community. Mm. And like I say, from the substations to the poles, to the wires, et cetera, it would be a very expensive proposition. And then you would have to also make sure that you had the ability to maintain and improve that system. So you need crews, you need engineers, you need business offices, you need all of the policies that develop around how a person signs up for the energy and the how the rates are adopted, et cetera. It's a complicated arena, but clearly in a smaller geographic area, there can be a real advantage to the centralization, in this case, government running it. The downside can be if you're not careful and if you don't organize the utility around its core product, which is, in my opinion, the lifeblood of modern society. If you cut off electricity, the lives we lead change enormously within 3 or 4 days. It's almost like going back to survival.
Mm-hmm.
So that lifeblood is extremely important for the safety, well-being, so many of the benefits we enjoy that other purposes for it can't be allowed to interfere. We try to keep our rates low, which is always going to be a battle, but our rates are low. I think they're the lowest in the state. But that means you can't be using the electric company in order to raise money to offset taxes. Or you want to build a new school building. Well, let's just take the money from the electric division so I don't have to raise the taxes. I can just put that money in the electric rate. And, oh, just a few cents, what's the problem? That's where you can go off the rails, and it's no longer being, in my opinion, run, operated in the spirit for which it should be run. That is lifeblood of modern society. We've got to keep that electricity on, and don't try to make it as again, a generator of money for other maybe worthwhile causes, but they probably should have their own piece of the tax rate, not the electric rate.
Wallingford Mayor Bill Dickinson, thank you so much for giving us some of this perspective.
Very good. Nice talking with you, Melissa.
Checking in right now with Milford Mayor Ben Blake. And thank you for being here, Mayor Blake. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Well, you know I'm one of your residents, so it was a rough go. I'm going to be honest. It was not fun, Mayor Blake. It was not a fun week. Not at all.
I'm with you. We had about 50% of the town that was down, at least as of Tuesday when the storm hit, mm-hmm. and things slowly improved. At my house, we got power restored on Saturday, and I think most of the town was restored by Saturday, but then there was a few onesie-twosies that even took the next day or so. So it was a rough go, as you said.
Mm-hmm. And, it's interesting. I was thinking about this as well. So we don't use it actually for this exact reason. Forever, my husband and I always had cable, and we do have Wi-Fi, but we always had cable for the longest time. And after, I believe it was one of the major snowstorms, it was something that happened recently, we got rid of cable because it was gone for a while and we thought we're paying astronomical prices for it. So we went the YouTube channel route, or whatever you want to call it, YouTube TV. And I have a lot of inquiries this morning from our listeners who live in Milford. And I'm just wondering, have you gotten any sort of sense from Optimum Cable, Wi-Fi, anything as to what's going on? I guess there's still many people who are missing that this morning. For example, I have somebody in the Bayview section of Milford writing in asking about what's going on. Have you gotten any updates?
We try, but there has been a degradation of communication as well as service with Optimum and their parent company, Altice. Their service has just gotten worse and worse, and this storm really kind of highlighted that. We have had terrible service at a time when people are remote working, when they're so reliant on good internet service to be able to distance or virtually communicate with people for work. You know, God forsake if this happened in another couple of weeks when people were back to school and,
right. You
know, many students will still be distance or virtually learning. This is something that really has to be a priority with those utility companies, with, you know, Optimum, to get on the ball and make sure that they improve their service and they improve their quality, because, you know, it really got worse and worse and worse over the last, you know, week during the storm. And they haven't been communicating with other utility companies like UI and Frontier to make sure that the lines get restored. We've been pushing them. We've been on the phone with Optimum as well as UI and Frontier each and every day. But those companies were certainly unprepared for the storm. There was a delay in restoration. You know, Milford's one of those towns that is battle tested. Most of the time, we have shoreline flooding because we have the longest coast in the state of Connecticut. But in this case, we were just whacked with trees down and associated power lines down, and it really brought down the grid so that we had to push the utility companies, and they just did not rise to the challenge. They, you know, UI was, I think, their delay. You know, there was no work done really, at least in Milford, for the first 12 hours, even make safe work. And then it was 72 hours before they got any restoration crews on the ground here locally. So it was just a delay, which really frustrated, you know, everybody. I know that Milford was not unique. I knew that there were these same challenges across the state of Connecticut.
Well, and it was interesting, Mayor Ben Blake, because, you know, like I said, we live on the Orange Milford line, but we're more in Milford, and we aren't too far from the Boston Post Road. And it was interesting, at one point we were driving, I think this was Wednesday or Thursday of last week, and we had been driving around to go get food because we had no power, and you know, we see two power lines hanging, literally just hanging in the middle of the street. But in the meantime, on that same road, they're doing road work. And I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. What is wrong with this picture? We have construction crews who are still doing their job, getting stuff done, still on task. But I have not seen a utility crew since this whole thing has happened. And lo and behold, I think Milford started seeing utility crews really show up like Thursday afternoon. I mean, it was just, have you ever seen, you've been in office for a while, had you ever seen this slow of a response in past storms?
It was, I agree with you 100%. It was just a situation where UI was way underprepared. I don't think that they understood the magnitude of the storm, but they should have, because ratepayers have been paying lots and lots of money towards storm preparedness for the utility companies. UI has been collecting from customers for the past many, many years, you know, the additional surcharge for making sure that we were prepared for the storms. And then the big storm comes and the response is slow, delayed, just unacceptable.
What are you calling to see? By the way, we're talking to Milford Mayor Ben Blake this morning about the power outages. What are you kind of hoping to see at this point? We have talked to First Selectmen. We've talked to other mayors. We've also talked to the governor on this. It seems like everybody obviously feels that we really got shafted here. Connecticut really got whacked hard, and whether we were unprepared or not, this took much longer than we had ever really seen in our history in Connecticut. You know, and everybody has sort of a different idea of what they think would work best for their town or city. What would you like to see happen after this storm?
Bring some accountability to the utility companies. After every storm, we huddle up and there's lessons learned, and the utility companies, UI, pats us on the head and says that they'll do better, that they'll improve. You know, I was here for Storm Sandy and the recovery from Storm Irene, and those are the exact conversations that we had. And then it seems all those lessons learned have to be learned again. So it's frustrating that all the things that we think that the utility companies are doing to prepare for the next big storm. You know, we know that they're increasing their rates and they're increasing the customer charges in order to do so. Nothing's happening. So this time there has to be some concrete legislation in order to make things happen so that, you know, these types of excuses that UI and I guess Eversource, Milford's not an Eversource community, but those type of excuses make some type of difference.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Ben Blake, thank you so much for checking in this morning, and I'll be sure to have you back on the show very soon. Hopefully we get some updates, especially on the cable and internet very soon. So thank you.
Be well.
Yeah, you too. Okay, second time's a charm. Monroe First Selectman Ken Kellogg, thank you so much for joining us this morning. How you doing?
Well, thank you, Melissa, for inviting me to be here. I'm happy to be here. You know, personally, I'm well. Thanks for asking. But you know, I'm angry and I'm frustrated on behalf of our residents from the situation that we're in here today.
It's crazy to think, First Selectman, that we are exactly a week. You know, this afternoon will mark one week since Tropical Storm Isaias came down and totally destroyed Connecticut in the sense that we had over 800,000 customers without power in the state. And even this morning, looking at Monroe, I just think it's astonishing that we still have 14% of your town without power. You've got 1,100 customers without power right now. That's crazy.
Yes, that's correct. About 1,120, I believe, is the number right now, 14%. And that's, you know, that's certainly down dramatically from the peak, which was over 80% when this first started. But as you said, we're a week into this, and the progress has not been the sustained progress that we would have expected and that our residents and Eversource customers deserve, quite frankly. It has been an ongoing challenge. This event, you know, we've been through many of these events in the past, and there's a normal plan. There's a normal process of how this is approached, and that hasn't happened from the very beginning.
What does the plan usually look like, if you don't mind me asking?
Not at all. I mean, certainly in the immediate aftermath, the first thing that is done as we, you know, have, you know, crews go out and they're responding to emergency calls, obviously that's the first thing for life safety. But then we immediately expect Eversource Make Safe crews to help make scenes safe or declare areas safe so that we can get roads open. Those Make Safe crews simply did not show up in the time frames or the magnitude that we would expect. There was sporadic other activity occurring in town well before roadways were opened. And our crews, unfortunately, you know, we can't go into an area that is energized or potentially energized. It's just not safe.
Right.
And so our crews were standing at the ready, waiting for an incredibly long period of time. I mean, we were sitting here on Friday evening with state roads still blocked.
Yeah, that's insane.
State roads. Mm-hmm. You know, our priority first is to get those roads cleared so that emergency vehicles can pass safely, so that residents can freely travel safely, and quite frankly, so residents are not trapped in their homes. Mm-hmm. There are some, you know, neighborhoods that were completely blocked off, and that took far too long. I'd like to say that we're largely past that point now, but it took longer than it should have. We do have a couple of roads that are still an issue, but those are largely due to communication lines. So those are a little bit we've been working with those companies to try and get them in here to solve those. But those are only one or two that left in town. The issue we're at now, ever since, is simply a lack of any kind of sustained communication or actionable information that we're getting out of Eversource. You know, we typically are in a mode where we can understand what their crew complement looks like, how they're approaching any given operational period, so we know how many crews are coming in, what areas of town they're targeting.
So they're usually more transparent with you.
There's usually much more communication, and there's usually much more specificity, so that, you know, we can tell residents, we know that there's a crew on this street. It affects, you know, now I do know as of this morning, there's a crew on one particular area that affects 133 customers. You know, that's like the that's very we haven't gotten a whole lot of that type of information up until today, and even that was very little.
Is it because they were so unprepared? Like, why the lack of communication, would you say?
It seems to me that something dramatic has changed in their approach. I don't know what that is, and I hope that in the future, when we're past this and we do after action reviews, that and when PURA does their investigation, we'll get more information as to what the failures were. But quite frankly, we have an Eversource liaison. We always have in our emergency operations center. They're good people. They're professionals. But they can't share information that they don't have.
Right.
And I've felt their frustration because they've said, I wish I don't have that information. So I can't tell on any given period of time whether we have, and I've heard other, mayors and first electmen have said the same story, that we don't know whether we have, three crews in town or 30 crews in town. We're not being given that information.
Mm-hmm.
And how they're approaching any particular period of time in terms of where the priorities are and their restoration, what the game plan is, basically, what the batting order is going to be for what streets we can expect to come up at any given period of time.
Talking right now to Monroe's first selectman, Ken Kellogg. And Ken, I have a couple of people who have been writing in this morning, mm-hmm. Obviously Monroe residents, and one of them had mentioned a switching station on Old Tannery Road. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's anything that can be helpful at all, but I know she had suggested, is this something as simple of turning a switch? I want to say, without even knowing a lot of background, that it probably isn't that simple. This is clearly very complicated, which is why we're seeing such a delay, not just here, but across the entire state.
Yes, I'll certainly pass that along. However, Eversource has, in the limited communications we've had, they've told us numerous times that earlier on that we may not see as many crews in town because they're working on what they call the backbone. They're working on substations. They're working on larger transmission lines. And I get that. We can understand that, but that's the kind of, we need to understand that communication better. So you tell us, what that is going to accomplish, how many residents that's going to restore and whereabouts. There have been, I know that they have had work at different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they've told us that it may appear that it's a simple fix on a road because it's simply, a fuse that needs to be, flipped back on, or it appears to be a very simple restoration effort, but they'll tell us that, fixing that won't do any good because there's a much larger problem in the backbone, which, until they fix that, they won't be able to energize a street that's downstream from that. So I understand that. That makes sense. But again, this is where the communication would be helpful so that people know that
right.
It's not that that's being ignored. It's that they're working on a much larger issue that has to be fixed first in order to get to those smaller issues.
And I'm assuming, Ken, that you're having the same issues that we were hearing about in Milford, Westport, some of these other areas. That same thing for cable and internet. You're not getting a lot of feedback from them either.
We are getting almost nothing from them.
Wow.
We do report in. Our dispatch center obviously reports in wires down or wires in the area, but we do not have a liaison to our emergency operations center, and the only information we're getting is that they're saying that the bulk of their issues are secondary to power issues, which may not be at the same street level. So, for example, someone may have power restored on their street. They're not getting internet yet. That's because the power that communications company relies on to get internet to that street is down somewhere else. Again, I understand that, but we're not getting a level of detail as to what their restoration effort really looks like. And quite frankly, I've gotten no estimate as to even here's a global time frame that they would expect to have internet up. That said, I will say our town has seen a tremendous number of trucks from Spectrum, from Frontier. I see them out and about. It's clear that they're working, and I do know several residents have told us that their internet has come back up. So, again, wish we had more information, but it is – good to hear that we are getting some restoration.
Mm-hmm. Well, we really appreciate you coming on, especially at short notice, for Selectman Ken Kellogg of Monroe. Thank you so much, and certainly we'll keep in touch with you.
Well, thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it again. And, you know, we're fighting hard for all of our residents, and we're going to keep fighting until we get this town fully restored.
I can tell you they really appreciate that. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thanks, Melissa.